New Thinking Aloud is presented by the California Institute for Human Science, Mind, Body, Spirit University, a leader in fully accredited in-person and online U.S. college degree programs in the topics we cover here. Visit their website at cihs.edu.
Thinking Aloud. Conversations on the leading edge of knowledge and discovery with psychologist Jeffrey Mishlove.
Hello and welcome. I'm Jeffrey Mishlove. Today we'll be exploring the extraordinary life of parapsychologist, mystic, and scientist Dr. Hiroshi Motoyama. And my guest is Professor Thomas Brophy, who is an astrophysicist. He is also president of the California Institute of Human Science. He is the author of several books, including The Mechanism Demands a Mysticism, Explorations of Spirit, Matter, and Physics. In addition, he has written The Origin Map, a Prehistoric Megalithic Map of the Universe, and two books co-authored with Robert Bouval. One is called Black Genesis, The Prehistoric Origins of Ancient Egypt, as well as Imhotep the African, The Architect of the Cosmos. Welcome, Thomas.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for coming to Albuquerque.
My pleasure.
As you know, I knew Dr. Motoyama. I corresponded with him. I wrote about him in 1975 in my first book, The Roots of Consciousness. I was very inspired by the work that he did. I regarded him as a very significant pioneer in the field of parapsychology. And you obviously knew him and worked with him.
Absolutely. He was a very significant figure in the history of this field, I think, really, and now in integral education with the California Institute for Human Science that was founded by Dr. Motoyama.
Mm-hmm. Well, he bridged so many different areas. Many people are interested in the chakras, for example, and when it comes to scientific investigation of the chakras, I think he did more than any other researcher of whom I'm aware. He was also, as I understand it, a deep yogic practitioner, and a Shinto priest.
Yes, he was very much a practitioner and teacher of yoga, yogic practices, as well as a scholar. And he really combined those areas. I might mention a little bit about his upbringing and his mm-hmm. life. And maybe I could start, though, with a little story about, like you said, the relevance of his work. A lot of your listeners have probably heard of the Kyoto Prizes, a very significant prize given by the Kyoto Foundation that's for scientific research, and it's considered almost as prestigious as like the Nobel Prize, mm-hmm. but it's a little bit more humanistically oriented, perhaps. And the Kyoto Prizes were founded by a man named Mr. Inamori, who was a well-known industrialist who founded Kyocera Corporation, but a very significant grant funded these Kyoto Prizes, Humanitarian and Science Kyoto Prizes. And Mr. Inamori was a student of Dr. Motoyama.
Oh.
They wrote a book together, and it's not translated in English, but it's so popular in Japan. It's titled roughly Man's Search for Meaning. And that's just one example of the kind of influence that Dr. Motoyama had in the world, I think. Mm-hmm. And those of us who work at CIHS, the school, we're always finding out about new associations, new things that Dr. Motiyama had that we didn't even know about, and the importance of his life. Mm-hmm. So,
and you yourself actually studied in Japan.
Yes, yeah. He invited me in 1995 to study with him at his institute in Japan for a month on a sort of a fellowship that he called the Motoyama Bentov Fellowship, named after his friend, Yitzhak Bentov, a physicist who published a kind of an important little book called Stalking the Wild Pendulum.
Yes.
Bentov was very early modern interested physicist in the integration of science and spirituality. And he was a friend of Dr. Motoyama's, and Bentov died tragically relatively young in a plane crash. And so Dr. Motoyama had this little fellowship named after him.
A very tragic accident, and many people mourned the loss of Yitzhak Bentov at the time. Well, one of the things that you pointed out to me, which I think is interesting for students of parapsychology, and many of our viewers are, is that Dr. Motoyama studied and worked with J.B. Rhine in Durham, North Carolina.
Yes. Dr. Motoyama had basically a postdoctoral research fellowship at the Rhine Institute, whatever it was exactly called at the time, at Duke University.
Rhine left Duke, as I recall, in 65 and set up the Foundation for Research on the Nature of Man outside of Durham. And I presume that's probably where Dr. Motoyama was.
Yes, I think so. And Dr. Motoyama, he remembered that experience and worked very fondly. And that was a time when he got some funding to travel to India and other locations, I think the Philippines, with instrumentation where he studied yogis in meditative practices to measure their physiological processes mm-hmm. while they're doing in deep meditation.
And today he's probably most remembered for a device that he designed for that purpose.
Yes, he invented a device called AMI, Apparatus for Meridian Identification, which is, it's an electrophysiological device that measures the physiological response of the skin to a small voltage applied at 28 acupuncture points, the Jingwell points at the ends of the fingers and toes. And the AMI's innovation is the analysis of the early onset of the current in response to the voltage. And mm-hmm. so that's the advance that measures, that is correlated with, according to the theory, the functioning of the chi meridian system of those acupuncture meridians.
And as I recall, he was also looking at the voltage differential between the right side and the left side of the body.
Yes. So
finger for finger.
Yeah. The MI device, it's standardized to measure every time all 28 of these Jingwell points. And so there's a baseline of measures against which the unique measure, you know, is measured, and those that can then be analyzed for multiple things: mm-hmm. Left right balance, upper lower balance, and basically any kind of traditional Chinese medicine diagnostic method. It's an assessment device. It's mm-hmm. not a medical diagnostic device. It's a research device.
Yeah.
But because it measures the correlates of qi activity of the meridian system, you can use traditional Chinese medicine type diagnosis with it.
And, you know, this was at a time in the late 60s, early 1970s, that Westerners were just beginning to become aware of the field of acupuncture. And for the most part, people thought, well, this is just some sort of ancient superstition. It's totally unrelated to Western medicine. But here is a man trained as a Western scientist coming up with empirical verification of this ancient meridian system and also correlating it with health conditions.
Yes, yes, exactly. And that was Motoyama's central research focus, to demonstrate the existence of the subtle body, such as the meridian system that's used in traditional Chinese medicine. And it was very early work, and we've really come a long way in the West. You know, acupuncture is now an accepted practice. You can become licensed acupuncturist in many states. And there was a conference on called Towards a Science of Acupuncture. It was a 2-day conference about year 2000, held at UC Irvine. And it was funded by the National Science Fund, the National Institutes of Health, and the National Academy of Sciences, because there was a wonderful little paper published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, which papers are authored by members of the NAS, that showed correlates of brain activity through functional MRI, which was kind of new for research then, with the particular acupuncture point stimulus that traditional Chinese medicine was said was correlated with that. So you know, these very conventional-minded scientists, National Institutes of Health and National Academy of Sciences, said, hey, let's have a little conference to study this. Mm-hmm. And I attended that conference. It was really wonderful to see this progress. And there were like two consensuses at that conference. One consensus was that acupuncture does work demonstrably, especially for analgesia, and even in animal studies. So that was a consensus. Acupuncture does work in some cases for some things. And the other consensus was that there was no physiological correlate of acupuncture points. And so I thought, you know, coming from a Motoyama CIHS, that this is a really seminal conference. From these two scientific consensuses, they're going to realize, well, hey, if there's no physical anatomical correlates of acupuncture points, but acupuncture works, maybe the traditional Chinese medicine system of a non-physical qi energy interacting with the physical body is going to be investigated. Sadly, that didn't happen, though. The funding authorities at the end of the conference, they said, okay, this is a great conference, good results. We're going to fund studies that will show how acupuncture works as an artifact of the nervous system.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do know there was some progress looking at the production of endorphins in the brain as a result of acupuncture stimulation.
Yeah, I think that's one of the categories of studies that prove that show that it does work. You can measure endorphins increase in the brain. You stimulate the acupuncture points.
But Motoyama was actually, through these physiological, electrophysiological measurements, suggesting something much more than that, that the idea of qi energy circulating in the body began to make some sense. And I gather that at your institute now, you have maintained a focus on research on what people call subtle energy.
Yeah, that's right. So you can call this field of research generally subtle energies research. Mm-hmm. And it's very much a part of CIHS's focus at this time still. Mm-hmm. We just had a wonderful doctoral dissertation project. One of our students completed, in which he measured more than 100 people with the AMI device and other newer subtle energy correlate devices, and is finding very nice results.
I know that one of your faculty members there is Dr. Beverly Rubick, who I've interviewed several times about bioenergies and
Yes. Beverly Rubick's been involved with CIHS since the founding of CIHS. Mm-hmm. And there were a number of wonderful people, luminaries, who your listeners would be, your viewers would be familiar with, who were also involved in the founding of CIHS, or the early part of CIHS, such as Dr. Stanley Krippner, William Tiller, who I think Dr. Tiller sort of coined the term subtle energies. All of these leaders in research in this area have always been connected with the CIHS's mission.
I knew Dr. Tiller when he was the chairman of the material science department at Stanford University, a very eminent scientist who has gone into the field of subtle energies and made some real breakthroughs, which incidentally are described by Beverly Rubick in one of my interviews with her, which I can link to right now. If viewers are interested, they just click on the upper right-hand corner of the screen and we can watch that Beverly Rubick interview. But back to Dr. Motoyama, one of his unique contributions was the integration of an understanding of the ancient Hindu notion of chakras with the Chinese notion of the acupuncture meridians.
That's right. That's right. So his book, Theories of the Chakras, is where he works out that integration. And absolutely, that's an example of the integrative approach and seminal integrative approach that Dr. Motoyama applied to both scientific research and education.
And I gather it's not just some sort of theoretical speculation that I can overlay a map of consciousness produced in India with one produced in China. He actually had empirical data suggesting a relationship between these systems.
Yes, yes. His method was always focused on wanting to gather the empirical evidence to back up these theories.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I wrote about years ago was his study of advanced yogis and advanced meditators. Because he himself was one, he had a group of people he identified as having their chakras opened, and he began doing measurements of them using his device. And as I recall, one of his findings is that the people who are more advanced in yogic meditative practices, not based on the years of their practice, but based on his intuition about the opening of their chakras, that the measurements he found on those individuals, I guess you could say, were more volatile, more expressive. You could say these people were more flexible, but you might also say that they were more subject to extreme changes.
More active chi energy system, yeah. Generally, yeah. And that was a key part of his method and his interest. Because he himself practiced yogic methods from a relatively early age, mm-hmm. and he experienced awakening of the energetic systems in the body, much along the lines that the ancient texts describe, mm-hmm. and so that motivated him. He was also scientifically minded as a young man, so yeah. That motivated him to get advanced degrees both in an MA in physiology and in philosophy and religion, and combine the two in a quest to bring out, to investigate and make the community aware of evidence that verifies these energetic systems of the body.
In your writings about Dr. Motoyama, you compare him to some well-known integral thinkers, people like Sri Aurobindo or the American philosopher Ken Wilber.
I suggest in my writing that we can see Dr. Motoyama's principles, eight principles for the founding mission of CIHS, as an independently developed integral paradigm that's on a par with other integral paradigms developed, for example, by Ken Wilber and Sri Aurobindo and British philosopher Roy Bhaskar. Fundamental mission to integrate empirical science and spiritual intuition and human development, developmental growth, together into a map and method for investigating reality.
You're the president of the institute that Dr. Motoyama founded. And I understand that you're very close to achieving regional accreditation through WASC, the major regional Western Association of Schools and Colleges that accredits all of the colleges on the West Coast. That's a big step.
Yes. CIHS was granted the status of candidate for accreditation July 2018. And we have our next site visit, seeking accreditation site visit coming up in March 5th. And the status of candidate, you can see CIHS listed on the WASC website with the status. And it means that with the previous site visit, the WASC determined that CIHS is likely to be able to achieve full accreditation within the next 5 years. And we have the next chance coming up very soon.
It might happen even sooner. Who knows?
We're hopeful.
Yeah. So, as to my knowledge, there aren't very many colleges, universities where somebody can study a concept like subtle energy.
We think CIHS is essentially unique in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
There are other graduate schools that have programs studying spirituality, of course, and even some people studying parapsychology.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as a whole institute focused on the integrative scientific, subtle energy, spiritual aspect, integrative approach, we see CIHS as kind of unique in that regard.
Mm-hmm. And you offer a variety of degrees, a doctoral degree, a master's degree, and even a bachelor's degree completion program?
Yes, we have master's and PhDs programs and a bachelor's completion.
Mm-hmm.
And the master's and PhDs are in three basic departments, psychology and integral health and comparative religion and philosophy.
Mm-hmm. So it's a very unique school in that a small school.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's unique, and it's founded on Motoyama's principles and mission for the school. And so it's also unique in that sense. And with the accreditation, we are maintaining the uniqueness, but also integrating it into broader integral education vision generally.
I know that the accreditation process for any college is extremely rigorous, especially these days because, you know, there are places, the schools that have offered degrees that have turned out to be practically worthless. So there's enormous pressure on accreditation agencies not to allow that to happen and to make schools such as yours jump through many hoops in order to get accredited.
It is very rigorous. It is very rigorous, but it's actually good because mm-hmm. the things that WASC requires the institute to demonstrate and do actually help us become a better institution as well. So
yeah.
That's I'm being honest. I'm not just being nice to WASC right here.
So. Dr. Motoyama, as we mentioned in the beginning, was amongst his other many credentials as a yogi, was a Shinto priest.
That's right. Yes, he was the head priest of a Shinto religious organization in Japan called Tamamitsu Jinja. And actually in Japan, it's classified as a new religion.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many new religions in the general Shinto system in Japan,
mm-hmm.
But it's the Tamamitsu religion in the Shinto system. But as a religion, it's very integrative. I encourage you can go to the Tamamitsu Jinja website. They have an English version now, and the description there, you'll see how integrative, religiously combinatorial it is, how it's a very integrative approach.
I gather that there was some connection between this religious organization and the founding of the California Institute of Human Science.
Yes. Well, Dr. Motoyama was head priest of the religious organization the whole time he was working on developing the creation of CIHS. And very generously, the Jinja donated land and buildings and financial support.
Mm-hmm. But I know from our discussions that there's an openness to all of the spiritual traditions of the world. It's not as if this is an institution promoting that particular religion.
That's right. It's very much, CIHS is very much universalistic in its mindset and approach, and that's why we use the term integral or integrative and inclusive. I like that also about the Tamamitsu Jinja religion as well. It's, you'll see that they, the current head priest, Dr. Motoyama's son, is very integrative and integral in approach.
So was Motoyama then the founder of that new religion?
Well, his mother, his spiritual mother, a woman known in Japan as Odai-sama, was the founder of that. And she discovered Hiroshi Motoyama at a young age and adopted him to become the next head priest of the religion. She was a very well-known priestess in the religion, and also a kind of a shamanistic practitioner. And her clients included like people very high up in the government and that sort of thing.
I see.
And she recognized Hiroshi as a boy to become her successor and adopted him with the permission of Hiroshi's biological mother.
Oh.
So he was raised by two mothers. The first founding priestess of the Tamamitsu religion and his biological mother.
How interesting.
Yeah.
Now, probably many of our viewers really don't know anything about Shinto. It's a Japanese, a native religion to Japan, but it's not really spoken of much when we talk about world religions like Buddhism or Hinduism or Islam, Judaism or Christianity.
Motoyama thought of the religion Tamamitsu Jinja as inclusive of those other great religions that you mentioned. I actually asked him about that once when I was working closely and regularly with him. How should I introduce you? Are you a Shinto priest? And he would say, no, it's more than that. Shintoism is mainly concerned with the tribes of the emperor. So he was very integrative and bringing together in his approach.
What little I know of Shinto is that it had to do something with the Japanese belief that their emperor was a godlike figure.
His approach really transcended that. So in the sense of recognizing that humans can become godlike through development, his approach was inclusive of that, but also very much globally oriented.
Do you know anything about his other contributions to parapsychology?
He founded a organization that he called the Institute for the International Association for Religion and Parapsychology, that is centered at his organization in Japan, out in it's a temple on a beautiful lake in Inokashira Park on the outskirts of Tokyo. And so just through that, he was very much encouraging and always investigating new developments in the field of parapsychology.
I gather that, you know, when I founded this video channel, the idea was because I had a unique doctoral diploma in parapsychology and I had a vision of parapsychology different than, say, the Reinian vision, which is basically we'll take the techniques of experimental psychology and apply them to card guessing and dice throwing experiments. Very important. But my vision was that parapsychology has a history going back thousands of years and can be found in every culture. And I gather that Motoyama had a very similar vision.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. He really, through integrating the ancient traditions of Indian Ayurvedic system with the chakra nadi system and the traditional Chinese medicine acupuncture and meridian system, which are ancient traditions and systems, he really connected modern parapsychology with these ancient methods and systems.
Mm-hmm. Well, Thomas Brophy, this has been a very interesting discussion about a very important person who is, I suppose, you know, not as well known as he might be. And I hope that this video will encourage people to look into his work more and to look into the work of your university, the California Institute of Human Sciences.
Thank you. I know this will be wonderful to get the information out about the important work that's been going on in there.
Well, thank you very much for being with me.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for being with us. Book 2 in the New Thinking Aloud Dialogues book series is a tribute to parapsychologist Russell Targ, celebrating his 90th birthday. You can now download a PDF copy or order a beautiful printed copy of Issue 6 of the New Thinking Aloud magazine.